Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bors. So Boris Johnson has broken cover. He obviously listens to this podcast. Last night, he took part in the first major TV interview of his leadership campaign, speaking to the BBC's Laura Koonsberg. James, how did he do?
I don't think there was any. I think from the Johnson campaign, this was the first interview. Obviously, it's taken on more importance given the events of Thursday night in the last few days. I think it was fine from their point of view. They've got their Brexit message across. His answer on Brexit, I thought, was noticeably crisper than it had been at the hustings on Saturday. And he got in some of his attacks on Jeremy Corbyn. And I think that is what they will try and do. I also thought it was interesting how there had been some talk yesterday, but the Johnson camp were furious about the kind of Hunt description of him as a coward and all this stuff, and the predictions that his premiership would come to an early end unless he did more of this stuff. But it was interesting that, and he's done this again on LBC this morning, he won't take the bait and attack Jeremy Hunt directly. Indeed, he was strikingly trying to say how similar he and Jeremy Hunt's Brexit positions are. Now, obviously, in lots of ways, they are similar, except that for Boris Johnson, October the 31st is this hard deadline, which it isn't for Jeremy Hunt.
I mean, Katie, last night on Brexit, Boris Johnson also admitted that if there was the no-deal Brexit, then he wouldn't have an implementation period, which was a sticking point for his campaign earlier last week when he said, you know, some things we can sort out in a no-deal Brexit after we leave in the implementation period. Do you think that's him, you know, becoming more realistic about his Brexit position?
Yeah, I think you saw Boris Johnson admit that this wasn't just a one-way street in terms of the UK doing whatever it wanted in the event that you end up with a no-deal Brexit or you can't get what you want in the withdrawal agreement. And he admitted that you would need EU cooperation to avoid a hard Irish border or tariffs on trade in the event of a no-deal Brexit. So I think there was a sense of getting some what I suppose critics would call realism from his strategy. I think when it comes to his overall strategy, though, still has less detail than Jeremy Hunt's. Ultimately, it is to threaten no deal and see what you can get from it. And I think what's interesting is he is now in this media blitz and he's doing an LBC phone-in this morning. And he has made his first, I suppose, light blow on Jeremy Hunt, where he said, "I'm the only candidate with a fresh approach to Brexit. The other candidate in this race would simply kick the can down the road." So I think you are seeing what they're trying to get across is this dividing line, because Boris Johnson is actually willing to have a hard deadline, something that some have debated, but he seems to be very back on having the hard deadline at the end of October and pointing out that Jeremy Hunt doesn't have such a hard deadline, so actually could be have more of a Theresa May-esque approach to Brexit. Now, I think that if he does keep hammering that type of attack line, it will be successful with the Tory membership and the base. I think others will wonder, well, how exactly are you going to deliver this no-deal Brexit? He suggested that he believed MPs would get behind it. The idea that MPs are going to get behind it, I think, is slightly pie in the sky. But you never know. And I think Boris Johnson's whole approach is just testing things out and seeing, well, if I don't blink, who's going to blink?
I mean, the thing about both Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt's Brexit strategies is that they both rely on an assumption. Jeremy Hunt's assumption is that he is essentially sufficiently charming to persuade the EU to offer up a concession, that the EU don't want no deal. So they will look at the situation, they will offer something up that will enable Jeremy Hunt, maybe not by October the 31st, but at some point in the near future, to get a deal through Parliament. Boris Johnson's assumption is that putting the threat of no deal on the table will so change the dynamic of the negotiations that you will get a deal that is acceptable to Parliament. You can pick holes in both of their approaches because they both make these assumptions. But I also think this, which is Anne Burrard this morning said that the optimism isn't enough to deliver a Brexit deal. Yes, optimism is not sufficient on its own. But I think one thing that the last few years have demonstrated is that it is a necessary condition to deliver a Brexit deal. In that one of Theresa May's big problems has been a lack of optimism or confidence about what you can do and what you can achieve. And I think in a way, if you look back, I think one of the big mistakes of this period has been that Theresa May didn't resist more vigorously Parliament's attempt to force her to seek an extension, because I think that before Parliament mandated the extension, you know, as the clock ticked down to March 29th, there might have been some movement. You know, there is no getting around the fact that in a no-deal scenario, the Republic of Ireland faces some very difficult choices. But, you know, you're never going to... You've got to get into that what Theresa May's willingness to essentially accede to Parliament's request that she requests an extension was she never got into that 5 minutes to midnight space at which a concession might have emerged.
James, one thing that jumped out at me about that Ireland problem is that Boris Johnson said again that the British government wouldn't be the one to put up a hard border. And the Telegraph reports this week that actually the EU is starting to crack on that, that they're putting pressure on Ireland to say, well, if the UK is not going to put up a hard border, what are you going to do? So could we be starting to see a breaking in the resolve of the EU27's unity?
Well, I mean, I think we should be careful not to jump too far. But, I mean, there is an interesting question here, which is, you know, the Irish government would have to make a very big strategic call, essentially, whether they were going to essentially create border infrastructure between the Republic and the North, or whether they were going to have to allow some more checks between it and the single market. Now, the Irish view is they mustn't do anything that calls into question in any way, shape, or form their full membership of the single market and the customs union. But that does, again, pose some very difficult political problems for them at home if they are seen to be the ones. Now, they obviously will try and blame it on the UK, but it will be tricky. And I think that, you know, we should remember Elmar Brok, the German MEP, who said, you know, that the, I'm crudely paraphrasing here, but essentially said that the integrity of a single market was more important than the peace process. And so if a border was needed for the integrity of a single market, it would have to be erected.
And Katie, Laura Queensberg also brought up the Carrie Simmons row. I mean, did Boris Johnson answer that satisfactorily? Is it going to die down now?
So I thought Boris Johnson gave a compelling answer personally on this, which was suggesting that the reason he has never really spoken about his personal life is as soon as you do, you drag your loved ones, your family members into it, and that can have unforeseen circumstances. Mm. They are suddenly involved in something they haven't really signed up to. I think the slight problem for Boris Johnson is that we had this photo emerge yesterday, which by all accounts appeared a little bit staged. It was of Carrie Simmons and Boris Johnson. Some people said he looked more like Ed Sheeran thanks to his checker shirt, but sat on a picnic bench in a fairly quiet area or at tables. It seemed to be in a field, but I don't know if it was near a pub. And in the photo, gazing lovingly at one another. Now, it may just be that someone was just strolling around the countryside at that point and decided to send it to lots of papers but not get a picture byline or tweet saying they've spotted the couple. But it just looked slightly set up. And I think the complication here is, and it was then put to Boris Johnson in the interviews, you can't have it both ways. So if this was a staged photo, are you now saying when it's appropriate you want to give an insight into this or not? So I think if it was a staged photo which Boris Johnson was involved in, that contradicts his answer. I think that his answer works if you're never going to talk about your private life. But I also think another tricky thing right now is you then yesterday had the Telegraph report suggesting that Boris allies were blaming friends of Carrie Simmons for the photo leak. And as soon as you get into that, it just gets very messy. And I don't think that's the direction the Boris Johnson campaign wants to be in. So I think the answer works, presuming there are no more photos of the couple in very quiet, idyllic areas of the British countryside.
I think the other problem is this, is in terms of selling newspapers and in terms of providing a story that gets people talking around the water cooler, this story is a better story than the finer details of the Malthouse Compromise or
sure.
The applicability of GATT 24 to a post-Brexit no-deal scenario. And I think this is one of the reasons why I suspect that this story will not entirely die down, because it is one of those things that everyone has an opinion on and it doesn't require you to learn as much jargon or technical terms as talking about no-deal planning or the finer points of the backstop does.
Katie, and on the Labour side, last night MPs received an email from Jenny Formby, the party's general secretary, asking them to tell the party within 2 weeks whether or not they intend to stand at the next general election. This has angered quite a few Labour MPs, hasn't it?
Yes. So firstly, it suggests that Labour think a general election could be close, and that links into what happens if, we presume, Boris Johnson becomes Prime Minister and A, there's a confidence vote, because there's been talk about whether or not he can command the confidence of the Commons. I think a difficult Commons vote for Boris Johnson in terms of a no confidence vote would be in the autumn, once his Brexit strategy is much clearer, rather than one as being discussed just before the summer holidays. But that's one way people try and stop him, could lead to a general election. And also, if he did pursue no deal all the way, could lead to that vote. So this is Labour preparing for the eventuality of an early election, and they've sent around this message to every MP asking them to confirm in the next 2 weeks if they want to stand. Now, I see that one MP has already said he does not, but I think the reason it's angered MPs is because they're worried that this is going to lead to trigger ballots and deselections. And what we saw happen at Labour conference was the threshold, so the percentage of which the local party needs to say that they want to have a trigger ballot to deselect, has reduced. So I think it has created unease that we could be heading to that scenario.
I mean, it's a big test of a discipline of the Corbynistas, because obviously, in terms of winning a general election, the sensible thing for them would be to not go about deselecting people right now. Because you, at the moment, you're going to have a few weeks of blue-on-blue Tory action. Mm. You're going to have Tory MPs constantly talking about whether or not they would bring down their new leader, assuming this is Boris Johnson. And if Labour then stepped in and started having its own row, and you know, all these attempts at deselection, you know, they all reveal kind of quite how far to the left the Labour Party has shifted, that I think could be quite politically problematic for Labour. You know, the discipline thing for them to do would be to essentially not deselect anybody.
But then again, James, for the last three summers, whenever the Tory Party has come into problems, Labour has always created its own rows as well.
I think this is, you know, this is one of the remarkable things about British politics right now, which is that, you know, that you would, in a way, we can debate which is the more spectacular failure of the last few years. The Tories to deliver on Brexit, and that is the kind of centrepiece of their manifesto, or Labour's failure to capitalise on that and the fact that we're not sitting here with Labour 10, 15 points ahead in the polls.
A cheerful note to end on. Thanks, Katie and James. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes, and we do love hearing from you. You do know the email as well. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.